14. Kanoa walked in a straight line, prepared to bludgeon the first person who crossed his path. Unfortunately, the first person was a horse, and Kanoa's anger subsided into a crushing weight. This fool of a prince was going to get them all killed.
"You appear to gravitate toward the more pungent these days," Jerwan Leaftalker said, smiling broadly and startling Kanoa as the wizard came around the other side of the horse.
Kanoa shook his head. Too many musket salvos had permanently damaged his hearing.
"And you don't know when to leave well enough alone," Kanoa said, walking past his father.
Jerwan reached out a hand, his fingertips brushing Kanoa's arm. The touch was as light as a leaf floating on a stream. But it stopped him, like a cannon firing canister shot at 20 yards. Bloody wizards.
"Judging by the color of your face and the tone of your voice, I'd say you've met the prince," Jerwan said, chuckling softly, removing his hand to pat the horse's neck.
His other hand reached into his hides and pulled out bits of kila fruit, which he offered to the animal. The red pulp dribbled down Jerwan's fingers as the horse nibbled at it, and Kanoa felt a queasiness in his stomach.
"He is an arrogant little poppet who cares more about finding purple-winged moths and pleasing his mother than leading a regiment."
Kanoa kicked at a weed near his boot.
"Regiment? It won't be anything close to what it was before. And when were you going to tell me the Iron Elves wouldn't actually have any elves in it?"
Jerwan slowly shook his head and clucked his tongue. He walked over to Kanoa and bent down by his feet, gently straightening the weed. For an old elf, he still moved with fluid ease, a skill Kanoa had long ago given up trying to master.
"The past is gone, my son, or at least it used to be. For now you must embrace the present, so that you may walk with a clear mind and free heart into the future, while being ever vigilant for that which went before you. For it may yet come again."
Kanoa looked down at his father with wide eyes.
"Is this mystical pap the counsel you give rule? I mean, in between tending to blades of grass and injured mice?"
Jerwan stood up and smiled.
"No, I only say it to annoy you, and because it's true. As for rule, I tell him he needs to adapt to his surroundings. Be open and malleable, not hard and stubborn, as some are wont to be. Oh, and that he should have more Tremkeberry tea shipped over from home. I find the local tea here rather bitter. Which reminds me," he continued, grabbing Kanoa by the arm and steering him around the horse, "I am making dinner and am in need of a pair of strong hands to help me."
"I'm really not in the mood for roasted worms and grass soup, father," Kanoa said, allowing himself to be propelled along nonetheless.
"Wrong season for worms,"
Jerwan said absently, casting a quick glance down at the ground.
"The earth is too dry at the moment. She waits for Sky Sister to cry."
Kanoa looked up to the sky and sighed.
"Rain? It's called rain? Look, is your tent much farther? I have many things to do before the regiment sets out on this mad adventure."
"And one of them is to eat a meal with your father, if that isn't too much to ask,"
Jerwan said, squeezing Kanoa's arm as they walked.
"Ah, here we are."
"Where?" Kanoa asked. Jerwan had taken him to the edge of the camp where an old willow tree bent over a stream. Its branches were thick with leaves and draped on the ground.
"Mukhoji,"
Jerwan said, and the branches parted. For a moment, Kanoa's body tingled, and he heard, or thought he heard, a very old, very wise voice answer his father. He pushed his senses outward and listened, but there was nothing more to hear.
"Come, we have arrived just in time," Jerwan called from inside.
Kanoa shrugged and stepped through the hanging branches. They closed behind him with a soft swish, and he was inside a cozy and surprisingly cool dwelling that was not at all obvious from the outside. A large bowl, sanded and carved to a fluid smoothness, floated above a small fire in the center of the floor. Kanoa couldn't help but smile. His father had mastery, not that the old elf would call it that, over the elements of life, yet used his great skills to cook with a wooden pot. The flames curled around it, trying to feed on the wood, yet the bowl remained a beautiful satin brown, its surface completely unblemished. Inside it, water was just starting to boil, thin beads of air bubbles winding their way to the surface to release tiny wisps of steam. "A fire within the confines of a tree, father?" Kanoa asked, walking around the small area and marveling at the coolness of the air. He undid the chin-strap of his shako and took it off, running a hand through his sweat-soaked hair.
"Balance in all things, my son," Jawan said, sitting cross-legged on the grass floor in front of the fire, and motioning for Kanoa to do the same. "The fuel is dead wood, and I have ensured the flames do not feed on more than that."
"Black Spike would not have been impressed," Kanoa said, regretting it immediately. Jawan's bond brother, one of the mightiest wolf oaks to have grown in the deep forest, had been killed many years ago, and it was a loss Kanoa knew the old elf felt deeply. Jawan shook his head.
"Not at all. My Reich Far, like most of the wolf folks, was far more pragmatic than the Long Watch make them out to be. Fire, like all elementals, is necessary, even desired at times. Should an elf shun water because he might drown and so die of thirst? My bond brother would not begrudge me a warm meal. May his ashes bring life to those that follow."
"Sounds more reasonable than the woman I just met," Kanoa said. His heartbeat quickened at the thought of her, but he wasn't sure if it was passion or frustration. Jawan's eyebrows rose in exaggerated surprise.
"You're courting, then? Well, perhaps she can knock some sense into that thick head of yours."
Kanoa waved the thought away. "She's Elfkainen. Some kind of witch, too, for that matter. Our views on the world aren't exactly in harmony."
"A witch,"
Jawan said, his voice taking on a dreamy quality.
"I do hope the grandchildren take after her."
"Easy, father. She hasn't even bothered to see me since we arrived in camp," Kanoa said, pacing around the fire. "Not that it matters." Jawan shook his head slowly, letting a small sigh escape his lips.
"Be not so sure of what matters and what does not. Drops of rain become an ocean. And if courting hasn't changed completely since I was your age, I think she might be waiting for you to visit her."
"I've been rather busy, what with this lunacy I've been dragged into," he said, putting a halt to his pacing and choosing a fallen log as a seat.
"The grass would be better, my son," Jawan said.
"And the lessons in life begin." "You can burn wood, but I can't sit on it?" Kanoa asked, throwing his shako to the ground beside him. "Or is it only that I am in touch with nature if my backside is flat on the earth?" Jawan began unfolding a cloth-wrapped bundle.
"Don't be silly. But you may wish to reconsider your seat, as it is full of ants. A type of biting ant, actually."
The log soared through the branches as Kanoa jumped to his feet and began to beat at his trousers. Jawan made a tut-tut sound and shook his head.
"A whole year alone in the forest. It's a wonder you didn't burn it down."
Kanoa glared at his father, but the old elf was busy arranging a group of vegetables for the cooking pot. He sighed and walked around to the other side of the fire to sit down, checking the ground carefully before he did so. Jawan handed him a thin wooden blade and a potato. Kanoa hefted the knife and was pleased with its balance and weight. He twirled it between his fingers, faster and faster. It felt warm and comfortable in his hand, and the edge gleamed with a sharpness to match any fire-forged blade.
"The potato will not hurt you," Jawan said, peering down his nose at Kanawa.
Kanawa stopped twirling the knife and began cutting slices of the potato into the pot, gently sliding each chunk into the water.
"You haven't told me what you think about all of this," Kanawa said.
"There is only one world,"
Jawan replied, passing Kanawa two carrots and a small pouch filled with a tangy-smelling spice.
"All of us, from the smallest insect to the largest mountain, must live within it, and in harmony with one another."
"You missed your calling, father. You should have been a courtier. You managed to say something and nothing at the same time."
Kanawa sighed dramatically as he diced the carrots with quick, smooth flicks of the knife. When he was done, he appended the pouch with the spice into the bowl, turning the water a rich brown color and filling the air with a tantalizing aroma. Jawan wasn't paying attention, handing Kanawa a red kelsa root and some bright green sprigs of raimoni.
"Stir the water. Keep everything moving," Jawan said.
He rocked back on his heels, looking up at the hanging branches, which suddenly parted to allow a thin shaft of sunlight to shine down in front of him.
"The Empire thinks like the bull dragon. Exert enough force, and it can impose its will. Bite and bite hard, and it can kill anything. In this, the Empire believes, so it seeks out that which it does not understand, but nonetheless fears, and in finding it, would control it or kill it."
"Yes, but the bull dragon, when using its wings, can walk across a frozen lake, fishing between the cracks without falling in."
Kanawa sat up a little straighter, pleased to be able to use one of the old elf's homilies against him for a change.
"More than fish swim beneath the ice, my son. But the dragon only sees its own reflection."
"Is there a moral to this story anywhere in the near future?"
Jawan looked at his son with raised eyebrows and motioned for him to get back to the pot.
"Only young bulls seek out opponents. The older, wiser ones lie in wait."
Kanawa thought about that as he used the knife to stir the pot, adding more carrots and herbs between swirls. A chunk of potato bobbed to the surface, its already golden brown hue a clear sign the soup was nearly done.
"If I didn't know better, father, I'd say you were trying to warn me."
Kanawa watched the potato bob on the surface. He stabbed it with the tip of the knife and brought it to his mouth.
"Patience,"
Jawan scolded, slapping Kanawa's hand down and sending the potato flying back into the pot.
"And if you would open your mind as wide as you do your mouth, you might benefit from it."
Kanawa rubbed his hand and looked at his father.
"I've been heeding warnings all my life," he said, pointing to his ruined ear.
Jawan looked at him, and for a moment Kanawa saw not the always sage wizard, but a very worried parent.
"Your destiny is your own,"
Jawan said at last. When had that ever been true, Kanawa wondered.
"I know our history, father. Somehow in the world before this one, her hand touched me as it did so many others, and I was marked, an elf destined for the Shadow Monarch's realm. Tukma Ka Eri."
Jawan's voice grew louder, and the wizard was back.
"Nothing forged in fire is the mantra of the Long Watch, but it is not the only way. Do not think you know everything you think you know."
Kanawa's head was already in too much pain to work that all the way through.
"The Iron Elves were the tainted ones, father, and we did our best to prove everyone wrong. We joined the Empire to fight against our destiny and for a better future. And what do we get for it?"
"So this is your excuse for all you've done to yourself these last few years? Self-pity?"
Kanawa pounded the ground beside him with his fist.
"I didn't choose to be born with a black ear tip. I didn't court-martial myself. I didn't banish myself to the forest, and I certainly didn't volunteer to be an outcast," he shouted.
"And yet you live as if you did," Jawan said, motioning for Kanawa to keep stirring.
Riddles and tests. Always a new challenge. Growing up, Father had been like a shadow at dusk, teaching with questions, guiding with silence, never scolding and never praising. His mother, on the other hand,
"would not approve of either of us at the moment," Jawan remarked.
"Damn it, Father," Kanawa said, the hairs in the back of his neck shivering. "I hate it when you do that."
Jawan stared at his son in mock surprise.
"My dear boy, you are as obvious as the night after the setting sun. It is no great feat to listen to the flow of life around you and follow its natural course."
He held up his hands and waggled his fingers at Kanawa, gently mocking him.
"I can see you took the stories of the Long Watch a little closer to your heart than I imagined. I blame myself for letting your mother teach you that. But she was determined you would join us as Reich Farai and prove the birth omen wrong."
"And you?"
Kanawa asked, wondering where this was all leading.
"You adhere to the old ways. This shelter, the cooking pot, the hides you wear, even the way you talk. If I didn't know better, I'd say you had a change of heart about steering me toward the Empire."
Kanawa said it in jest and was completely unprepared for Jawan's response.
"Perhaps. If you had stayed with the tribe, we would not be in this land, and you would not be embarking on this quest for the Eastern Star."
The two sat in sudden silence, both staring at the fire.
"Father," Kanawa finally said, "do you really believe it is true? A red shooting star falling in the east here, and now buried under some dung heap in Lugoth Jor, and the Viceroy come back to life?"
Jawan's answer shook Kanawa to his bones.
"The rocks are real enough, and I have seen things that make me believe the rest is true as well. And though you have chosen not to tell me, you have dreamed of her recently."
"How did you know that?"
For an answer, Jawan looked up to the branches overhead and whispered something. A moment later, a single willow leaf came fluttering down to land in his outstretched hand. As Kanawa stared, the leaf stood perfectly upright in his father's palm, slowly turning. Jawan studied the leaf for several seconds, then closed his eyes. There was a rustle of wind in the branches above their heads, and suddenly dozens of leaves were falling, but many were from different trees. Kanawa pushed apart the wall of willow branches to look outside. A strong wind was snapping banners and chasing dust clouds high into the air.
"The rock knew your name,"
Jawan said. Kanawa turned back to his father, now surrounded by a pile of leaves on the ground.
"It doesn't anymore."
Jawan nodded.
"She's reaching out far and wide, beckoning to those who would serve her. A black, cold flame in the night, invisible to most, but not all."
Kanawa stirred the pot so hard he splashed some of the soup into the fire.
"Serve the Shadow Monarch? I'd kill her just like I killed her servant."
"Not quite the threat it was a year ago,"
Jawan said, winking at his son.
"But I have no doubt you would oppose the Shadow Monarch with every fiber of your being."
Kanawa was in no mood to be placated. How could his father not see the only course of action open to them? The Iron Elves should be called back, and then the entire Imperial Army should be sent against her mountain. What will killing the Viceroy all over again achieve?
We should go after her.
Jawan shook his head.
"She is strong now, much stronger than she has ever been. Her trees have dug deep into the mountain, feeding on a power they were never meant to taste. A direct assault would end in disaster. No, Lugath Jor is where you must go, and quickly.
With the prince in command?
Kanawa asked. Thoughts of the man made him grip the knife harder, his knuckles whitening.
What does his highness know about fighting?
Consider that this is the queen's son, the future king and ruler of the empire,
Jawan said, reaching over and tapping Kanawa on the hand so that his grip relaxed.
You have an opportunity to shape the monarch in waiting. Think what it would mean if you could convince him that the lands of the Hinter Elves were best left to us.
Kanawa looked at his father with genuine surprise.
The past is gone, father. The Hinter's only hope is in embracing the future. You know I think this idea of the Queen's, if it really is her idea, to be a complete farce. But this empire isn't going away, and with each passing year it grows stronger. The Long Watch will have precious little to watch over if they don't accept that.
The Long Watch have seen the rise and fall of more than one empire. Do not be so sure it won't bear witness to the demise of this one, too.
Then help me, father. Help me to destroy her. Convince Ruul to call back the Iron Elves before it's too late.
Jawan shook his head.
The more I think on this, the more I am happy that they are far away. She would try to turn them, too. No. Better they stay where they are for now.
Then what should I do?
Kanawa asked. Jawan acted as if he had not heard him.
I received a message from your mother. The Long Watch are very worried.
Kanawa sighed.
The Long Watch are always worried. It's their nature. They fight for a past that is gone. I'm worried about the here and now.
It is the here and now that is becoming the past that has them worried, Jawan said. Many said we should burn everything and put an end to her.
Kanawa leaned forward.
Burn it? I can't imagine the elves of the Long Watch burning a forest, not even her forest.
Probably not. Their compassion for all living things is a heavy burden. I fear before long we will reap a bitter harvest from this.
He hesitated for a moment, then reached out his hand and gave Kanawa a small pouch.
More spice? Unless you want me to kill rocks with my cooking, I'll need more than this.
The pouch felt heavy and cold. Kanawa undid the leather thong and looked inside. There was only blackness. Without pausing, he reached down with a finger to see what trickery was going on. His finger touched something freezing and hard.
What?
Was all he had time to say before a stabbing pain entered his finger like a thin stiletto of ice. He pulled it away and brought his finger to his lips. Immediately a bolt of lightning surged through his body, leaving him trembling and panting. He watched with open-mouthed amazement as Jawan reached over and took the pouch from his other hand, tied up the thong and set it on the ground.
It's an acorn from her Rakfar, the silver wolfolk she would not let die,
Jawan said, his face giving nothing away.
You have carried a great burden all these years, my son, bearing the mark of otherness with a strength and pride that has served our people well, though they choose not to see it. You did not bond with a wolfolk and join the ranks of the Long Watch. Yet you and those elves like you have protected the Hinter and its forests at a great cost. The Iron Elves live again, and I think this time they deserve more than the scorn of their people.
But this is...
Jawan held up his hand.
Help, I believe, when you need it most. Until then, leave it be.
Now, Jawan said, smiling again,
stir the soup, my son. Adventures, however ill-advised, are better met on a full stomach. and you'll need your strength if I'm to have grandchildren any time soon."
Kanawha did as he was asked, but he was no longer hungry. He stared down at the leather pouch on the ground. The full import of what he was embarking on was only just starting to seep into his understanding, the chances of success slim to remote.
"But real all the same,"
Jerwan said, taking the knife from his son's hand and stirring the soup himself.
"Let us hope it is enough."